Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Grant. Oh! A jawbreaker!
Curry with a drive. Blocked by Jackson.
Bane. Step back three. Bingo!
Okay, welcome into another episode of the Core 4 podcast on the Grizzly Bear Blues podcast network. I am Matthew Gill, joined as always by Xavier Dotson and David Buckler. Today, guys, we're going to be talking Grizzlies jerseys, the pick and roll offense, and as always, give out our weekly awards. But fellas, let's start here. We just watched the end of the Wizards game. Xavier, the Grizzlies come out slow, then build a huge lead in that second quarter, and then the third quarter kind of hit a wall where they weren't able to score for a little bit. Wizards get back into that game, but the Grizzlies are able to come away with the win. Was there any big takeaways you had from that matchup?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm not satisfied with that win, in all honesty. I feel like that they took their foot off the pedal a little too easily. Offense became stagnant, especially in that third quarter. I thought Ja Morant was sort of lackadaisical. It was a lot of times that he was forcing it in that third quarter right there, and the offense wasn't in flow or in motion at all. Guys was not involved. So I'm really not impressed with the win. I know it's a win is a win at the end of the day, but they turn around to play Boston, which is a strong team. You want to have a strong finish of that game. I feel like there wasn't a strong win right there. So, yeah.
Yeah, Dave, anything you took away from the matchup from your hometown Wizards tonight?
Well, I'd certainly rather win those close games, right? I mean, Xavier, we had, a 19-point lead, and they blew it. And you got to give the Wizards a little bit of credit for playing hard there. I think these are the kind of games that it wasn't the most satisfying win, but I'm really glad that they won it tonight. I think we would feel a lot different. We have a different conversation tonight if we wouldn't have come up big towards the end of that fourth quarter. Like, oh, my goodness, to blow that game tonight would have been very disappointing.
Yeah, especially with the huge lead. And I thought – one thing that was super interesting, Xavier, you were tweeting about it. I mean, I think everybody was getting frustrated with how slowly they started, and it wasn't really until the bench got involved that they built that huge lead in the second quarter. Like, the bench really bailed them out. I thought, as you said, Jaw kind of slow to get going there early. And the other thing was they were really making a concerted effort to keep Steven Adams off the offensive boards early, which is obviously something that the Grizzlies thrive on. And one of the report cards I wrote for the website, I was talking about coming into this matchup, how Steven Adams really struggles against those stretch four and fives, guys like Kristaps Porzingis. Like, when he's not able to be right around the rim and stuff, he can really struggle to contribute in that way. But it is a win, guys, and that is three wins in a row as well. So getting a little winning streak here going. But Dave, that was the 10th game of the season. 7-3 is the record, a game ahead of schedule from where me and you originally thought that they were going to finish at this point through 10 games. But the game tomorrow may be their toughest test of the entire season. Win or lose, kind of how do you stack up what they've done through so far going against a team like Boston, who is the defending Eastern Conference champs? Like, do you take any extra stock in how they perform tomorrow night against Boston?
I don't know if I take extra stock. I'm excited about the game. It's going to be fun to watch. I do think, you know, after a 3-1 week, sitting at 7-3, that's great. I did say 6-4, so they're sort of ahead of where I thought they would be. But I just feel like we let one of those games in Utah slip away. I would have certainly liked to be 8-2, could have been sitting on top of the Western Conference right now. And I just hope that, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, March, April, we don't look back on those two games in Utah and say, oh, my goodness. Well, you know, when they're in full tanking mode at that point, because I think some of these teams like San Antonio, Utah, you know, they've had kind of nice starts, but they're going to come back to the mean. And I think that those two games in Utah, it's a shame we lost both of those. look at the schedule coming up. It's an interesting schedule. We have home Boston Monday. There's that sandwich game with San Antonio Wednesday before sort of an emotional game Friday with the T-Wolves. There's some kind of history there. I know, Xavier, you were saying a good rivalry with the Timberwolves. And that's a big game at home on Friday against Minnesota. I hope we don't overlook San Antonio Wednesday.
Yeah, very possible. We got to show up every game. As you said, the Spurs have not looked completely like they're tanking just yet. They've been playing some really hard basketball. And the other part of it is after the Celtics game, that'll have been three games in 4 days. Like, it's really hard to get up for that Wednesday middle of the week game. As you said, once you have when you have a big rival in Minnesota on Friday as well. So it'll be interesting. Should be another good week of Grizzlies basketball. I think the schedule is going to turn up a little bit, at least, I mean, this week of Timberwolves and Celtics compared to what we've seen to start the season. I think there should be some really exciting games. So looking forward to that. But yeah, as we said, 7-3, nothing to sneeze at to start this season for these guys. All right. Well, let's get into our first segment, guys. We're bringing back Embrace to Debate, excuse me. And we're going to do it in the form of a draft today. We everybody saw on Grizzlies Twitter the new jersey dropped or leaked, I should say, early, and everybody got a look at that. So the jersey has been on everybody's mind. So we're going to do a little snake draft here. I think Dave is going to start us off, and then Xavier, you can take the second pick there for you, and I'll finish us up in the first round here. But Dave, take it away. What is your number one pick in the Grizzlies jersey draft?
Yeah, it's sort of age before beauty, right? So I get the first pick in the draft. That's how it worked out here. Yeah. So at the first pick, I would like to select that B.B. King record. I don't even know the names of the basketball jersey. We had the black with the gold and the grooves. It looked like the record. It had kind of the teal throwback to the old Vancouver days. I was stunned how much I liked that jersey, the look on the court. So I thought that city, I think it was the city edition they called it, where with the B.B. King sort of look, the honoring Beale Street and the music history of Memphis, that it was my all-time favorite Grizzlies jersey. I'm taking it number one. That's my LeBron James pick.
Dang, bro. I had that way back. I believe what it's called is the Isaac Hayes. I think it is the city.
Oh, yeah,
but
that's right.
Isaac Hayes, Soldier Field jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a good jersey, but number one seemed like a stretch to me. I don't know. It is a good jersey, though. I had it lowered down my board. But, yeah, all right, that's the first pick then. Xavier, you go ahead.
All right, for me, I got a classic. When the Grizzlies first came here, I really enjoyed those one-and-done 2003-2004 jerseys. But it still had the Vancouver teal, but they added in the red. It's just like a whole nostalgic feel to me. When I was a kid, my favorite basketball game was NBA Live 05. I would grind so hard to unlock those jerseys. And when I play 2K to this day with the Grizzlies, you will see me rocking those jerseys because I really enjoy those jerseys so much. And I was so happy when they brought them back. I think it was in 2019 or 2020. The years just been flying by now. But they brought them back. I had to cop me a whole fit with that. I enjoy those jerseys so much. It reminds me of Shane Battier, Pau Gasol, the early days. So I that's number one on my list. It reminds when I go downtown and I see the pyramid, I'm like, man, they had those jerseys on. That's a classic right there. You really can't go wrong with those.
Yeah, is this the black one you're taking that's got the
Yeah.
I had that as number two. That's a great jersey. All right, so we're going to snake draft this thing. So I'm going to take two here. And my number one is still on the board, honestly. Like, I feel like we all kind of went a little bit throwback at least to start. And I'm going to as well. A lot of people like the teal Vancouver Grizzlies ones. I love the white one, though. They didn't bring it back. Like, when they did bring back those old school Vancouver jerseys, they only wore the teal ones, I believe. I don't think Jaws ever rocked the white ones. But if you see a white Vancouver Grizzlies Mike Bibby out in the wild, man, that fires me up, dude. That's a great jersey. So I'm taking the white Vancouver jerseys. And then second one, this is an easy one for me, is the last year city jerseys, the navy ones, with the yellow accents, and everybody was wearing the yellow shooting sleeves and stuff like that. I thought that's the cleanest alternate we've had in the last couple years. I love those jerseys. So yeah, white Vancouver Grizzlies in the 2022 Navy City jerseys from me. Xavier, you're back up here.
Yeah, I was going to agree with you. The alternative blue ones, ever since the Grizzlies came out with those, was I think it was 2013, I believe, that they brought them out. Man, the alternative blue ones has always looked great to me. I've been happy because prior before then, it was just so simple with the navy blue and then the white. And every once in a while, they might throw in like a classic with the pros days jerseys. And those were so ugly. I'll be honest with the pros red ones and the ones that look like the Sprite colorways. I'm glad those days are over with. We got better designs. We got better colors. And I feel like that the Grizzlies have been doing a great job with their design team coming with new jerseys each year, especially when you got a guy like Ja Morant that's going to be number one in jersey sales, top 10 in jersey sales, really. You got to have some very nice looking jerseys. So number two on my list is that alternative blue that they always rock. And I feel like they get a lot of victories in those.
Yeah, it's a great jersey for sure. And it is, we should have said it at the top, but like, yeah, that is the thing, is like the Grizzlies do have some of the best jerseys in the entire league, yeah. Like top to bottom, incredible jerseys. Dave, you got two picks here.
Yeah, this is sort of interesting. We have different tastes, right, guys? So I get two picks here. I'm going to go with the classic current white jerseys that we have. If I had a jersey collection at home, I like having the current jersey. I think the white is very sharp. I really, really like the white with the blue right now. I would go with their home game day jerseys right now. I love having it next to the Isaac Hayes jersey, as you say. And I think I got a good collection there. And then I get another pick coming around at the top of the third round. And I'm going to go back to the core four blues with Debo and Conley and those, because it reminds me of when I was going to Memphis all the time for work and we would go to games, you know, at the FedEx Forum. And I thought those were beautiful uniforms, and it's a real special time for me as a Grizzlies fan. So I really like that edition of the Memphis blue uniform. That's very, very special to me.
Dude, that was going to be my next pick. I can't believe you stole that one from me. That is a great one. It's a classic. Even, you know, when it was the Adidas logo and just like that, just like shiny material, like it's so early 2000s to me, or mid 2000s, whatever. Like it is a great jersey, though. Xavier, your last pick here in the jersey draft.
Yeah, I was going to go the exact same, the 2005 through 2015 run with the white jerseys. It just, yeah, it's a nostalgic feeling. Going back to the FedEx Forum, seeing Mike Miller in those jerseys, Pau Gasol, of course, the core four. And I had a lot of memories watching players in those jerseys. I had like an old school James Posey jersey, the white one. Man, it's remarkable to think about. Like that, those jerseys should be sitting in a rafter somewhere because it holds so many valuable memories for Grizzly fans. And to now where we are now, to so many extravagant colorways and schemes now. Because those were really basic, if you think about it.
Big time, really, yeah. Basic.
Yeah, so now we have those high superstars of John Moran, and that we're able to have so many different designs and different color themes, I'm happy to see that. So, yeah, you can't go wrong with a classic white from the 2005 to the 2015 era.
But don't you always guys think, too, that was when sort of we had our own look finally? I mean, they took the colors from when they were the Vancouver Grizzlies. It was kind of cool when they got rid of the teal and the orange and the black. Or whatever. I don't know. They were never my – I guess it was teal with, like, maroon. It was kind of – I don't know. That was never my favorite color pattern for the team. And when they finally had their own sort of look for Memphis, I thought that was pretty nice.
Yep. They definitely. I mean, it's a classic. You can't go away from it. Xavier, what was your pick? Sorry.
Yeah, it was the 2005 white ones.
The white ones, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. Then I'm gonna finish us off here. I'm gonna take one that's a little bit obscure, but I think needs some recognition as the last pick here. I don't even know if you guys remember these, but these like gray ones with the yellow. Writing, they were like a wrestling tribute of some kind.
Yeah, they had the belt down the sides, right?
Yeah. Dave, I thought you were gonna snag that one, but I thought it needed a little bit of love, so I wanted to shout that one out as well. I thought that was a pretty solid jersey. But yeah, the Grizzlies have had a ton of really good ones. I wanted to get one last jersey take off here before we end this segment, man. I really do not love the new light blue ones that say like the Memphis Grizzlies on the chest. Like I liked the ones that they rocked last year and have for a couple of years, the swingman ones that just said Grizzlies. It's obviously just like a preference thing for me, but I liked the old Beale Street Blues way better. But there you go, guys. There's our jersey draft. We'll get a little graphic together, put them all out.
Hey, Mac, do we have one last note here before we go on to the next segment?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do we have the best jerseys in the G League? The Memphis Hustle is pretty cool, right?
Yeah, they are super nice. I'm not a huge red fan. That's just a personal preference kind of deal for me. And I also am not as familiar with the rest of the G League jersey, so it's hard for me to say who would have the best. And the other thing is like the logos and stuff on it, like G League Ignite jerseys, like they have tons of sponsorships and stuff on them that kind of looks kind of hokey to me. I don't know, but it is.
I was going to throw in there that the Hustle team, they just had a poll on Twitter in which the fans basically decided what their home, I think it was the home jerseys, what they were going to be like with the imprint and the emblem. It was going to be, it was all Memphis theme. It was four different options and it was pretty cool. I think they, I forgot which vote won, but I felt like that was really cool. Like the Memphis Hustle has some creative jerseys down there.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I feel like that's like one of the best things about like any minor league sports, like obviously the G League or minor league baseball, like you can be so much more creative with it. You know what I mean? Like there's not tons of money like at stake if you don't make a good one. But so one of the interesting things I wanted to see in this draft, if anybody was going to take the new one that's coming out, I think they're wearing it on Friday against the Timberwolves. Maybe what were your guys' thoughts about the new one that's coming out?
I mean, it was okay. It's not nothing that just stood out to me. I'm not going to lie. Like it's, The designs are sort of becoming a little bit more repetition in a way.
Big
time. We've seen it so much within the past 3 to 4 years. It's like, okay, maybe a different pattern, slightly different color. But besides that, it's not anything that's just eye popping that's going to be like, I got to get my card out and buy it right now. So,
hey, you're not going to Fans Edge tonight, though. But what about these 3-6 Mafia jerseys? Are they real? Or is this just a market? Where are these 3-6 Mafia jerseys? Are they going to be worn this year?
And that was like I think it was like a collab with Bleacher Report. That wasn't an actual jersey thing that they're actually going to rock on the court. I wish that was actually something.
But they're selling them, right?
I think it's just like a tank top, though.
Yeah, it's a collab. Yeah,
but yeah, they are fire. But I'm with you, Xavier. Like, at some point, like you, it's diminishing returns when you have that many jerseys. And like last year's lineup, top to bottom, was some of the best in the league, I thought. So like, I didn't see a ton of reason to change them. But obviously, like, it's all about cash. Like they want kids to buy more every single year, especially when you have a guy like John Morant. So, all right, that is the jersey draft. We're gonna move on now to Xavier's X's and O's. Talk a little offense today.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smart Food, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
All right, Xavier's X's and O's. Today we're going to be covering the pick and roll offense that we've seen so far and be so effective for these Memphis Grizzlies. Xavier, what have you liked what have you seen and what do you like of the pick and roll offense for the Grizzlies this year?
So, yeah, Of course, we've talked about this, of how the Grizzlies' offense looks stagnant around Ja Morant, in which they all guys are just looking around, waiting for him to make a play. And when they do try to run something, it's typically the pick and roll between him and Steven Adams. That's their bread and butter. You have Steven Adams, that's a group, that's a big, immovable force that's going to set those hard screens. And he clears up a lot of space for Ja Morant. But one problem I have with Steven Adams when he do set the screens is he just sets the screens and he stands there. I mean, at times he do go to the rim, of course, then getting the offensive rebounds. But it's something that my father used to tell me when I played basketball. If you're going to set a screen and you're going to roll, you need to roll hard and go straight to the rim, and just in case the point guard is going to give you the ball and you're going to be able to make a shot. We looked at Adams this past week. He had a great week. He, at Portland, he dropped 14 points, had 11 rebounds. Against the Hornets, he had 13 points and 19 rebounds. He was effective offensively. And that was one thing I do miss about Jonas Valanciunas. I know he wanted his touches down there in the post, but when he ran the pick and roll, he was going to that rim, and he had the touch to make those layups and those tough post hook shots. And we saw this past week that Steven Adams is capable of making some shots. And we need that at times. Those 10 points, those 10 to 15 points add up. I understand, like, yeah, he's out there for rebounding and moving those guys out the way. But those additional points and rolling straight to the rim, roll hard, it adds up. And that allows Ja Morant to have even more of a free offense to not keep the defense on their toes and guessing. So I want to see more of Adams being more aggressive on the offensive end, especially just rolling straight to the rim. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah, I would add that I'm glad you brought it up, that he is not as hard of a roll man as – like, Brandon Clark is obviously the better of the two at that and is clearly the better finisher inside. So I definitely am with you there. And tonight we saw it work really well, but the Desmond Bain and Brandon Clark pick and roll has been devastating, which is in part because Brandon Clark is a great roll man and he rolls really hard, but also the Bain playmaking thing is obviously very real and has been a huge part of this offense, and we've seen it so far. And so that connection has been really good. So, yeah, I mean, I think you kind of said it, but I don't know, in a close game where you need one bucket, like, is the value of Brandon Clark's rolling ability or the value of Steven Adams setting a better screen? Like, where do you kind of stand on which one is more valuable? Like, if you need one bucket, who would you rather have as your roll man?
It just all depends on what the situation is, especially matchup-wise. If you have a bigger center, let's say the other night against Portland when they was playing against Nurkic, Clark isn't strong enough to box out Nurkic and play him. You need Steven Adams there. But, of course, if you play in against a smaller big or a stretch big, of course, like we had tonight against Porzingis, Clark is able to be out there. So it just depends on the matchup and then as well, like, what is the offense needing at the moment? In crucial moments, they have a tendency to play Clark more than Adams, and that's when – really when Jaren is out there, and because Jaren can play that five, he's a little bit bigger. But it literally all depends on the situation. I mean, I'm comfortable with Adams playing the five and going straight to the rim. I love to see him more aggressive out there and scoring-wise. I'm appreciating him getting those offensive rebounds and those split actions and setting those screens and diamond Desmond Bane and others. But just being more effective offensively and scoring the ball, that would help a lot with the Grizzlies.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is, in reality, if you need one bucket, Ja's the one that you want scoring. So at that point, the answer becomes Adams, just because you know the screen is going to be so much more effective to spring a guy like Ja open to get to the rim and finish those buckets. And another thing that's super underrated, this kind of goes with just like his screening ability in general, but Adams is really good at this really specific thing that you don't see that much around the league. But if Adams is completely under the basket, like, he'll basically start boxing out his man before whoever is trying to score even goes up and is basically clearing the paint to where no weak side help can come and try and disrupt Ja or Desmond Bane or whoever it may be. It's like a really subtle like thing that he does not get enough credit for, is just clearing dudes out of the paint when their guys are trying to get to the basket.
So the pick and roll, though, right, in today's NBA is such a big part of the half-court offense. And one of the nice parts about our roster, it's very versatile. We have a lot of combinations that we can use in the pick and roll. As you guys have touched on, the one thing that makes me nervous about Adams, though, in that pick and roll is he's not very good at the free throw line. So late in the game, if they're going to, you know, pick their poison and kind of take Ja, and we're going to give the ball to Steven Adams, I don't like him at the line late in the game. I think what's really, really important, because all these combinations, like whether it's Brooks, you know, with Clark or Bane with Jaren, you know, they all finish different. You have to have someone at the corner three in that lineup that you feel comfortable with, because if it's not there to go to the roller who's rolling hard to the rim, or Ja doesn't have it to the basket, they look to kick to the corner. You have to have someone there who's going to be able to hit that corner three. I think it's a really important part, though, of our Memphis Grizzly half-court offense. And the good news is, right, we have a lot of guys that work into that rotation there.
Yeah, definitely. And we saw a guy like Jake Laravia shot the ball well tonight against the Wizards. He's a guy who can do it. Obviously, they want Zaire, I think, in those spots as well once he gets back into the lineup in close games. And I mean, even still, like, Jaren could be that guy in the corner for you as well, looking for the three-pointer. And obviously, Desmond Bane always moving around and stuff. And as you said, like, we have a ton of different combinations to run this pick-and-roll offense. We didn't even mention Tyus. Tyus is an incredible pick-and-roll point guard.
Yeah. I mean, he has a special connection with Brandon Clark already with the second unit. But, yeah, the pick-and-roll is the bread and butter in today's NBA offense. And it's so valuable because, I mean, it's endless opportunities to score. But like you said, we're so versatile and deep with dynamic and unique players. We can try different lineups. And if one person doesn't work there, we can put somebody else in that position.
Absolutely. All right, we are going to move on now to our third segment of the day. We're going to go talk a little G League in Climbing Corner. All right, down in Climbing Corner now, we just talked about the G League guys a little bit ago, and their season just got started as well this week. You know, we expect to see guys like Vince Williams Jr., obviously Kenny Lofton Jr. as well, down playing for the Memphis Hustle this season. But, Xavier, is there any other guy on this Memphis roster right now that could benefit from a little bit of time on the G League team?
I'll throw in Kennedy Chandler. Kennedy, most likely he's not going to get a lot of runs this season, especially. We've seen him play a little bit of meaningful minutes, especially against a Utah game. I think it was the second game. Yep. He played a little meaningful minutes. It's just he is an NBA-ready point guard, but at the same time, he has to learn a lot of more tangibles. And I think he will benefit a lot more playing in the G League, but it's just the hesitancy of not knowing if Ja Morant can be injured. So if we got him down there and we're on a road trip, it's not going to line up well. But Kennedy will most definitely benefit a lot playing with the Hustle. We saw Santi grew over the Hustle last year and become a blossom player as he is now. So I think Kennedy can learn and benefit even more if he plays a little bit more games with the Hustle.
Yeah, Dave, what about yourself? What do you see this Memphis Hustle? Where could some of these guys get some value by playing with the G League team?
Well, I think Xavier's exactly right about Kennedy. The problem is he's valuable at the Memphis level too. So, the experience you get at the Hustle, I think because playing point guard in the NBA is so challenging that it's very valuable, but he also is contributing with the big club. The problem is you look at his shooting percentages, 28% field goal, 25% from the free throw line. He's struggling with his shot a little bit. And it kind of, you know, going to the G League, if nothing else, they can get some confidence with their shooting, with their conditioning even as well, and getting some more minutes on the court. I think Kennedy Chandler is one that would really benefit it because of the position he plays. Vince Williams Jr. needs to go to the G League and just play a ton of minutes down there. His value to this organization is his three-point shooting. And I think he's going to get some confidence down there, some rhythm. And I think it'd be really, really important early on. He's shooting about 17% again for the big club. I know limited minutes, right? And it's hard to get that consistency when you're only playing a few minutes a game here and there. I think Vince Williams Jr. and Kennedy Chandler. The interesting thing, right, though, is Kenny Lofton Jr., everyone's darling in the summer league and everyone's darling in the preseason, is really not getting on the court. So he should be down there getting conditioning and confidence and playing and playing and playing, because I also worry once Jaren comes back and Zaire comes back, his opportunity to get minutes is even further reduced. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. Go ahead, Zaire.
Yeah, most certainly. Even you can say even more with Kennedy Chandler and Vince Williams. I believe once we have the full roster of Zaire, Jaren, and even Danny Green, that Kennedy most likely is going to be playing with the hustle about 90% of the time. It's just too many rotational guys, and we our two rookies right now that we've been playing between LaRavia and Roddy, they're getting meaningful minutes right now early in the season. You just look. If everybody's healthy, it's not enough minutes to play everybody, realistically. And especially with Taylor Jenkins just running a 10-man roster each night, it's just not adding up. So these guys, younger guys, they need opportunity to learn and develop. So their best situation is to play for the hustle.
Yeah, and I think that one of the big things is, like, you shouldn't look at it as a demotion. It can be this tool for – great development and getting reps and staying in rhythm when you're a guy like Kennedy Chandler, who's just not going to be able to see a ton of minutes unless unless there's injuries or there's blowouts. Like, that's really the only time. And when you're a scoring point guard like Kennedy Chandler showed he was in college, like, it's really hard to keep your scoring rhythm up when you're on the bench just every single night. So I think that he could definitely benefit from it. And then, you know, This might sound crazy, but I think David Roddy could benefit in the same way, to get some reps, just get some shots up. He obviously was more of an isolation scorer in college. That's where he's more comfortable. And from what I've seen this season, he's so much more comfortable playing alongside the rookies. And it seems to be he does a lot more of his scoring in garbage time with some of those younger lineups that Taylor Jenkins has thrown up out there. And I know they probably wouldn't do it because, one, they need him. He is playing meaningful minutes in place of some guys that are injured. But I see him as a guy that could really benefit from it. But, you know, it's just not realistic when you spend a first-round draft pick on a guy like that. But he's another guy as well. But, yeah, I think Kennedy Chandler is kind of the answer of the guy who could benefit the most that's not on a two-way deal right now, right? Being able to kind of get some practice – running an offense and stuff like that. But it's a hard thing to balance, right? Like, it's fair to say that, like, he could also develop really well just learning and listening and watching Ja Morant and Tyus Jones. Like, I don't know which one is better for his development, you know?
Let me ask you guys this. I think the guys we're talking about can't go wrong either way. But someone who's kind of stuck in the middle is Xavier Tillman Sr. And I thought again tonight he was terrible.
Yep.
If we're just being honest, I didn't think he played very well tonight. I don't think he's giving valuable minutes off the bench. Is he, you know, if he goes to the G League, you know, he's not going to be very happy with that. He probably views himself as a main rotational guy, or at least an NBA roster guy at this point. Are we sort of stuck in a gray area with him?
I mean, yeah, you really don't want to send Xavier Tillman. He's entering his fourth year, and he's going to the G League, that's not beneficial at all. So you have to look at other options from him, basically. Sad to say, yeah, he did not play a good game tonight. And it was, sort of sad at times, because, I mean, I was a huge Tillman advocate, especially he made that big three, was it that 2020 year to put us in the play-in game. But it's no growth. It's stunt. And then at times it looked like it's regression at times. So you don't want to put him in the G League level unless he's waived and he's trying to make his way back into the league. But throwing him there, I don't think he benefits, neither does he get any better. So I think you have to look at a different situation now with Xavier Tillman, which, okay, do we trade him? Is it time to move on? Should we waive him? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think
– 4 minutes tonight, you know?
Yeah, and he had a couple bad offensive fouls, and he hasn't looked good all year. And as Xavier said, like, he is – it's more like he looks like he's regressed more so than progressed in any way. In my opinion, I did write his name down, but, yeah, there's just no value to it. Like, he's too old. He's where he is with his contract right now. Like, there's just no benefit on either side to send him down. And yeah, I think that if a trade ends up happening, he's a guy that gets thrown in and maybe somebody else gives him a shot. If not, I don't see Tillman on the roster for much longer into the future either. But yeah, so we'll see. Keep an eye on those hustle. As always, we'll see how everybody else progresses throughout the season and kind of grows in their game with the G League team. All right, we're going to finish up here with some awards in our final segment. All right, finishing up the show today with a little trophy case. We got a couple of awards to give out before we get out of here for the week. Dave, what do you got for some awards this week?
Yeah, I really like this segment because sometimes we have a little more fun with it. Sometimes we take it a little more seriously. And my award this week, Matt, is I want to give Zach Kleiman, once again, the Executive of the Year Award. Because when you look at this team, I mean, between the clean cap sheet, the draft picks that we have, and the way they've managed this current roster is pretty exciting for the current team that we have and also the future. It's such an important time in the league because if you look at what's going to happen in the spring, there's going to be teams that are actively trying to, you hate to use the word tank, but they're looking towards Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson. There's franchise-changing players at the top of next year's draft. And when that's the case, they're going to be sellers. And Memphis is in a great position to be a buyer. And I think he has done a great job putting us in a position to win now. And it's interesting. We always think we have this young team and we're the team of the future. I think we're sort of the team now. You look around the landscape of the NBA, we can win it this year. And I think two things that he did that were very interesting is keeping everything flexible, not jumping into like a Kevin Durant type trade, which has not worked out for Brooklyn and for the Clippers. Kawhi's injured again. Look what's happened to Anthony Davis in Los Angeles. All the equity they had to give up to get Anthony Davis. I think he's kept their roster and situation very flexible. I think by not signing Dylan Brooks to an extension, we have that nice expiring contract to use, although I think Dylan's played well in the early part of the year. I'm very excited about what he's done with this team in a time where I think with the right move this spring, I think we can bring in a player that will help us put us over the top. I think the time to win is now.
Yeah, I mean, Kleiman is he's the best to do that does it, man. Like, that's why we have a segment named after him. Like, he has very few misses. Like, the only thing that really is a question mark right now is how good is Santi going to be? That is obviously something that could look really good. Or even if Santi doesn't pan out, like, it's not going to be a huge black mark on his reputation. The Desmond Bane draft pick, I know a lot of people were doing the redraft of that draft on Twitter this week. And yeah, I mean, for him to get him at 30th overall as an all-time draft pick, Desmond Bane is still on maybe the best contract in all of basketball right now. And one of the most underrated moves, man, like Taylor Jenkins was not going to be hired by a lot of teams when he got him. And Taylor Jenkins has really panned out for him as well. That's a huge plus on his resume as well. I mean, Kleiman's done a really good job. And as you said, they've maintained flexibility. I think we'll see how this rookie class pans out. I think that the time – I would push back a little bit on what you said, just that I think that they should have made a move with those picks when they had all three of them coming into this past draft. Like, I thought that was the time to kind of consolidate and move. But they do still have a lot of flexibility, as you said, and maybe it's not going to be a tanking team. You mentioned Kevin Durant. Things have not looked great there at all, and he already requested a trade once. Eventually, he will be able to be traded again. And maybe that's the time when the Grizzlies can move in.
Well, one last point about that, Matt, though. So interesting because you kind of push back on the draft pick. It's an interesting conversation because I like the fact that we kept our draft picks and used them for players that are kind of serviceable. I mean, you know, we could argue how great LaRavia is, right? They're fine. They're fine. They're getting better. They're getting some minutes. It's nice. And we talk about the guys who may or may not go to the hustle. We have a nice group of young players. Most importantly, they're under our control and they're not very expensive for the next couple of years. As much as we liked D'Anthony Melton, we liked Kyle Anderson, they were expensive considering the production we were getting from them. And I think it limited our flexibility long term. Having a group of young kids gives us, I do feel, the flexibility that we can then add salary and bring in someone who can really, I think, you know, take us to the next level. And I just look around the league and I think, why not us this year? Who else is great this year? Milwaukee looks fantastic, but they're in the East and, you know, who knows where the season goes, but why not us? And I think Kleiman gets my Executive of the Year award again, because I think he has just given fans hope for today and in the future. And I really like that.
Yeah, I don't want to be climbing into the ground too much. I love everything he's done, but the way I view those three draft picks is just it's like buying a new car. Like once you spin the draft picks and they have names attached to them, and you know it's Jake LaRavia, David Roddy, and Kennedy Chandler, they lose value. The value is that GMs like to pick guys and they like to kick the can down the road and make those picks. And I thought that they could have that the Grizzlies could have benefited from consolidating those into a better player. That was the way I viewed it. And they still have the opportunity to do that next year and the year after. Like they have extra draft picks. They have that 2024 Warriors pick. They can still make some moves and stuff like that. So I think that these guys work really well for the Grizzlies. But at the same time, also, if you have three, I would have liked for them to take a bigger swing on a guy like Nikola Jovic, who ended up on the Heat and looked really good against the Grizzlies in summer league. Like that's a guy who has the ceiling of possibly being like a top 50 player in the NBA. And I think that the three rookies we have are all going to be really good role players. None of them are going to be stars. So that was my whole thing coming out of that draft. I like the guys, but yeah, I thought that was going to be the opportunity. Xavier, sorry. We be climbing into the ground. Xavier, what kind of awards you got this week?
And I got one. I got Big Jaeger Award. I miss Pete saying Jaeger because Jonas Valanciunas. Jaeger means strength. I'm giving that to Stephen Adams. Stephen Adams was showing that he was a brute force this past week, bro. Averaging 13 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists in his past 3 games. And he's been a huge piece for a while. We've been winning three games in a row. Came in tonight. He suffered an ankle injury, but he toughed it out, man. That's Stephen Adams for you, bro. Like he just suffers, he endures the pains, and he does the dirty work for you, like Dennis Rodman. But that's what he enjoys doing. So I'm giving a big Jaeger to him, and another reason why I'm giving a big Jaeger to him because of his offensive presence. His offense has been showing, and it's effective. I'm happy about that, and I just want to see him keep that up.
Yeah, shout out Steven Adams. I've got one for him as well. But, yeah, you said he's had a really good week. I thought the Charlotte game was his best game that he's had as a Grizzly. He was unbelievable. If they had, you know, if they really wanted to push it, he easily could have got over 20 rebounds. He ended up with 19, one of which he ended up drawing an offensive foul that got waved off. That would have been his 20th rebound. But, yeah, I mean, he was killing those guys, and he's looked really good, and he's been a huge part. And as you said, he's gotten banged up a couple times. He always is prone to weird injuries, not just like bad ones. So this award, I'm calling this one the D. Bradley Baker Award. And you might say, who is D. Bradley Baker? D. Bradley Baker is a voice actor and voiced the character from SpongeBob who said he had glass bones and paper skin, dude. Steven Adams just gets the weirdest injuries, bro. He's rolling an ankle. He's getting hit in the head with the ball while he's checking into the game. He got hit in the nuts that game. Like, he's always got something going on.
Matt, they call it – in the NBA, they call it the lower abdomen.
Yeah, exactly. He takes shots below the equator a lot, all right? like, this dude gets banged up all the time. And that video, was it – I can't remember who they were playing. Who hit him in the face with the ball?
The Knicks.
Yeah, it was Derrick Rose. Yeah, yeah. As soon as I said that, yeah. Just weird stuff happens to Steven Adams. But as Xavier said, he toughs it out. He's one of the toughest dudes in the NBA, and he's always playing super hard. Last award here, and then we'll get out of here. This one is the Bill Simmons Award. In that Warriors series, Bill Simmons on his podcast said that Ja reminded him of MJ a lot in that his ability to float, to hang in the air and make these crazy layups, switching hands, changing directions, making people commit to him in the air and then doing something else as a counter move. He's an unbelievable athlete at that. The way he can go up, meet somebody at the apex, and on the way back down, either kick it out to the corner or shoot a layup. We saw him do that against the Wizards. So tonight, that hanging layup that he hit against the Wizards gives him my Bill Simmons MJ, Ja Morant MJ moment award. So shout out to Ja. Shout out to Steven Adams. Shout out to all the Grizzlies as well. It's been another great week of basketball. We got another one coming up. Celtics tomorrow night, and we will talk to you guys next Sunday. But before we get out of here, Xavier, plug your TikToks, your socials, your Twitters, everything for us.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ZayTimeTakes. You can check my TikToks out at _Xavier if you want to find out more about basketball analysis and more depth with other teams and whatnot.
Dave, what do you got?
Yeah, just Twitter at DLB1933 Ada, and you can check me out on Xavier's TikTok.
Yeah, absolutely.
Core four moments from the show. I really like those. Thank you,
buddy. Yep. Check them all out on Xavier's personals and on the show page as well at the Core Four. And I am at Matt H. Gill. Follow all of us, interact, let us know what's up, give us some segment ideas. Follow the SBN Grizzlies account as well for Grizzly Bear Blues, where you can find all of our content as well as a bunch of really great written stuff we've got going all year long. Again, thank you for tuning in, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Stolen by Morant. Hammer, nail, coffin. This baby is over.